engineer for 25 years, developing applications from requirements development through testing and managing projects for Department of Defense programs in communications, security, electronic intelligence data processing, and satellite weather data processing. Dave's been a technical architect on APHL's electronic laboratory surveillance message FLIP assistance team, been working with the PHLs to gather the necessary information to create standardized HL7 messages, then helping them get the messages through their labyrinth of security and to the CDC. Dave is responsible for all technical aspects of the FLIP process and ensuring that the FLIP process is being followed. Dave is also involved in the electronic test order and result, or ETOR, project, which involves aspects of the ELS program, but also includes bidirectional message flow. Dave.
Good afternoon. John, since I live in Omaha, maybe you can buy me a steak dinner. I'll take you up on that. So thanks, John, for that great introduction. I wish I could have written something that good. So, yes, as John said, I'm involved on the Public Health Laboratory Interoperability Project, or FLIP. And I've been doing it for a year and a half. So what is my job? I go in and work with public health labs to standardize their message format and their vocabulary so that we can deliver one format with one set of vocabulary to the CDC. At this point, we're only doing it for influenza, but as John said, we're slowly working into doing salmonella, and I'll be kind of touching on that as we go. I'd like to actually touch on two different aspects, if you will, of the public health lab to CDC interaction. One is working with the people, and the other is the challenges that are involved in doing this, both from the technology side and from various resources. So in terms of the people, we work with a great set of people. We have lab staff, we have IT staff, both at the state level and the regional county levels, and we're also working directly with people at CDC in the data message brokering department and the influenza epidemiologist. Once again, right now we're only working with flu data. So Charles had no way of knowing I was going to do this, but here's a picture of Charles. It just so happens Charles is in our audience. Arkansas was our team's first site visit, and we started taking pictures with the people probably for the first 6 months or so. Sarah, don't worry, I didn't put a picture in for you. I almost did. So here's Arkansas. We had a great time. I hope those trees finally got limbs and leaves, Charles. We also went to Rhode Island and many other states. We were fortunate to be able to visit many labs, but there were also a few labs that we did telephonic only support, and unfortunately Hawaii was our first one, but it just so happens with a little bit of work we were able to fold in a little bit here. Unfortunately Linda is not in the audience. She loves this picture of being folded in as one of the hula girls. But not to be outdone, Jerry Sable, again, not in the audience, our vocabularist, he also got in the act, but somehow or another he got in with a bunch of good-looking girls there. That worked out pretty well. And just to be clear, this is me. I'm not the pig in the background. I'm the guy in the front with the fire. So just want to be clear about that. And then our honorable Mr. Lipsky here, he had to attend with us as well, and we didn't see him much. He was hanging with the girls as well, so pretty good deal. But unfortunately, it was a virtual visit, and we were able to get Hawaii up and going pretty quick. So what are the challenges? As I mentioned, we have technological challenges, and we also have some resources. I want to briefly mention, well, maybe not briefly, I want to talk about the electronic laboratory surveillance message architecture that we used for influenza. Pretty simple. We have a laboratory information management system, or LIMS, on the left-hand side. In this example, it happens to be StarLIMS. And in the middle, we have Rhapsody, an integration engine that is going to take the output from the LIMS, produce that HL7 message that is going to end up flowing to the CDC. And we have a message broker, FinaMess in this example, that is going to encrypt and transport that message to the CDC, in this case, through one of the two flip route not read hubs. So FinaMess takes care of the encryption, gets it sent up through the firewall to the hub to the CDC. Pretty simple, one way. This may be a good point to jump in and say that on eTOR, electronic test order and resulting, it's a two-way. So it kind of isn't quite double the amount of work, but it is, the message flows from the LIMS to the CDC and back to the LIMS and I think back to the CDC. We're in a beta for this at this point, but it's still kind of sort of the same. So where I'm trying to go with this is, in terms of the LIMS, we have quite a few different LIMS that myself on the Flip Assistance team get to work with. And this is just a sampling of the LIMS that I've worked with. I know that there are many, many more out there. Also have the integration engines. And once again, we work directly with Rhapsody, BizTalk, Mirth, Cloverleaf. I've had labs that, such as Sarah's, that end up using a variety of, or at least two of these different integration engines to make their system work. We have some labs that build their own, and then we have some that skip the integration engine altogether. Their HL7231 message is being produced directly by the LIMS, so we can skip that step. But we have a lot between the LIMS and the integration engine. We've got databases to deal with, different flavors of those. What are the interfaces between the LIMS and the integration engine? Is it TCP being, you know, the data being shoved from the LIMS into the integration engine? Is there some sort of database relationship there? Or is the LIMS creating a file and putting it into a folder that the integration engine can pick up and process? We also have to make the decision, working with the lab, where are we going to do the translation of their codes? I'm quite certain that if every one of you out here was a public health lab, every single one of you would be putting out messages using different codes. So we have to work with you to produce a standard set of terminology that the CDC is going to be expecting. So where do we do that? Often it's done in the LIMS. That's where the translation occurs. Frequently it's done in the integration engine, where we maintain tables, and inside of Rhapsody, for example, we can do a table lookup to say if we have X, we're going to translate it to Y. And by the way, we're going to put both X and Y in the HL7 that's going to be output. Or another possibility is it's done in some other software outside of that realm, and we have to just work with that other software to get the codes that we want. We also are working with the different formats. The data coming out of the LIMS could be CSV, it could be XML, could be any number of different flavors of HL7. And one that I left off of here is, if it's database, it may just be raw database data that we're getting and we have to process inside of the integration engine. Jump ahead a little bit. We have the broker. We have the broker is what encrypts the message and then transports it out of your system. For the Flip project, we're using the Public Health Information Network Messaging System, or FinaMess. That's free from the CDC. But once again, you can either use FinaMess or some other solution, or no solution at all. When I say no solution at all, though, typically that's done inside of the integration engine, and it just ends up bypassing or integrating, if you will, that capability. Then there's also an interface between the integration engine and the broker. Is it some sort of a database interaction? Is it dropping the data into a folder? And then finally, are they going to use one of APHL's route not read hubs? We have one in Nebraska. We have one in Florida. They may choose to bypass and not use the hubs at all and do a direct send. So my point in all of this is there are lots of different combinations of working with all of this. In fact, if you calculate it out, it's something like 311,000 combinations of working with the different LIMS, different interfaces, different databases. The good news is I don't have to know all of them. I go into a lab and I work with them, and My saying with each of the labs is, I don't want to fish for them, I teach them to fish. So I go in and sit shoulder to shoulder with the Sarahs and the Charles and the other people in their labs to figure out what it is they have in their limbs, figure out what they have for each of the components, figure out how we're going to make the data that's inside of their limbs into that ultimate HL7 message that we're going to be shipping out. So, at the end of the day, we head back to our hotel, and I have to pick on one of our terminologists here, but be real quiet. We don't want to wake Eric up. So, on the way back to one of the hotels one night, I caught Eric sleeping, so I just had to catch this picture and put it in here, and he made sure he wasn't in here for me to poke fun at him. So some of the resources that we deal with, and this is probably the hardest part, is before we even go on a site visit, we have a pre-visit phone call. We try to find out who it is we're going to be working with from the lab. So at least 2 weeks, typically 4 weeks in advance, we'll make the phone call. We'll have a group conference and talk about, here's our expectations. We're going to need somebody to be the project champion, project lead from the lab, or we need to know who's going to be the terminologist, who are going to be the technical people that we're going to be working with, so on and so forth. But just as important as who is, we need to know that while we're on site, are they going to be available to work with us? Because it's very frustrating to find out that our points of contact ended up taking vacation that week, or they have to be in training that week. They're just frankly not available, and that just reduces our chance for a success while we're at the site. Another resource, I'll call it a resource, is the interaction between the public health lab and IT. All too often, there is an issue with the IT and the lab talking to each other. Some labs have their IT integrated in with the lab, and so the lab director can say, Dick, I need you to go out and do such and such. The IT person is assigned to the lab, and they'll be able to do that. But other labs, they have to, for all intents and purposes, open up a ticket, put a request out. That's going to be, you know, put in the job hopper. Whenever somebody's available to do it, then they'll be able to do it. This is probably a good point for me to jump in. Jack Kruger's here in the audience. Yesterday, he gave a presentation that discussed APHL's white paper, The Brave New World of Consolidated and Shared IT Services, a Guide for Laboratories. There may be a few more copies of this down at the APHL booth, but it's a real good paper, and it outlines some of the issues that we find when we're working with labs and issues that the lab should be considering as they start to go more and more into the electronic world, such as, what are the issues I'm going to have if I have IT embedded, or that I have to go interact with IT project managers to try to schedule it. My experience has been that there all too often is not nearly enough communication between the lab and IT, and it makes it very, very difficult to try to get the project completed in a timely manner. The last point on here is, really, is it a do-it-yourself visit? I didn't really mention that before, but one of the options is that we can contact a lab and they're savvy enough on their infrastructure that they can do it themselves. We just kind of give them a little kickstart and they go off and do it themselves. Maine was an example where we just got them going and voila, before we knew it, they were in full production. Another example, as I mentioned earlier, is an on-site visit. Both Arizona and Arkansas, both labs requested to have the teams come out and visit them. So we went out and spent 4 days with each of the labs, pretended like we knew what we were doing, and we were able to get them into full production actually fairly quick. And then lastly, as I mentioned, poor Hawaii, poor for us, is telephonic support. And we do have a number of labs that would prefer that we don't come visit them, that we do everything by telephone. Now, our experience has been the labs that let us come in and get elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder with them, that is where we get the most success. We have had a couple of labs where we've gone in and within The time period that we've been there, we've had them producing messages, and we've started the message validation process. Arizona was one of our fastest labs to from start to finish on getting done. I only say Arkansas wasn't, but that's only because the team, that was our first visit, and we were still trying to figure out what we were doing. But we got Charles and his team through it, so that was good. So in summary, the project success comes from, really, what is the available staff at the lab and at the IT as far as that goes? Are they going to be able to work with us? Are they the right people to work with us? What is the communication between the lab and the IT? If there isn't any communication, it just makes it much more difficult, as you can imagine, to have a successful project. What's the communication between basically the lab IT and the Flip Assistance team? I'd like to think that we do a very good job of staying in touch with the labs that we're working with to make sure that they're getting everything they need to be successful. And then lastly is the communication between the public health lab and their IT and CDC's data message brokering and the epidemiologist, because ultimately they're the consumers of the data that's being produced at the lab, and without them talking, it's pretty impossible for us to complete our work. That's all.